Hello and welcome to the 29th episode of AD Game Club, the not any more monthly video game club podcast where we choose a game for the past to play and talk about in depth. I am your host, Andrew, and joining me today is my best friend and co-host, David.
And I hope we find some ingredients around here.
Oh, I'm sure it's just going to rain from the empty looking Chinese boxes that are littered everywhere.
I mean, leftover takeout is the best place to find ingredients to cook with. That's one thing I've learned.
Yes. Before we get into this bonus episode of AD Game Club, I would like to mention that AD Game Club has a Facebook page where you can find us at facebook.com/ADGameClub. There you can keep up to date with us throughout the month and participate in the conversation by leaving comments. Anything you want to mention before we start talking about Kingdom Hearts 3?
Nope, not at the moment.
I'm pretty happy that we're finally talking about this game, because I made the declaration back in January episode, our Spider-Man episode, that we would be talking about this game. And then it didn't happen, and we never really addressed it. So I feel like this is fixing that.
Yes, soon all will be balanced, all will be complete.
So we'll get into our familiarity with the game, which will be upfront stating that I played this game in February, so some of my thoughts will not be as specific as if we had recorded in February, but I'll say, yeah, that's been my experience.
Yep, and I just played the game this last month, so my thoughts are pretty fresh, although I didn't get too in-depth into a lot of the collecting and completion, so I'm not sure if you did, but you may have more thoughts there.
I did not. I already know that you did a bit more than I did, as I was just like quickly trying to complete it at that time, planning to do a more complete run when the DLC and critical mode and stuff like that was released, as that was not there at launch.
Yep, that makes sense.
How about the series? What's our history with Kingdom Hearts as a series?
So I did not play it initially when it came out, but I did end up, I think I played the first Kingdom Hearts sometime after Kingdom Hearts 2 came out, because I remember watching my roommate in college playing Kingdom Hearts 2 and saying, "Oh, is this going to spoil anything for the first game?" And he said no, and then it immediately had a cutscene that just showed the end of the previous game.
Oh my gosh, that... Okay, that...
But I did eventually go back and play the first one myself. In fact, I think... I don't know about that, but at least Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories and Birth by Sleep, I borrowed your copies. So this is... Kingdom Hearts 3 is really just following a grand tradition.
Yes. I have definitely been a large fan of the Kingdom Hearts series since before it even came out. Like, when the advertisements were first coming in, when I was watching Disney Channel, because I used to do that when I was that age, in 2001. I was super excited about this game, going to Toys R Us and talking to anyone I could about hints and secrets and stuff like that. It was, from the very beginning, I've been a fan of this series. And I was excited to see that they finally... got to Kingdom Hearts 3, as I have been playing all of these side games and sequels. The only glaring omission I have was that I did not get to play the fragmentary tale for the Birth by Sleep 0.2 or whatever that crazy title is, the Aqua side story. Yeah, that's the only omission I have. And mostly it was just because I couldn't convince myself to pay $60 for what I had been told was like a 3-hour game.
Yeah, I have not played as many of the side games as you. I think the main one that I was missing was the was it Recoded? Was the one with Data Sara?
Which,
Although,
oh my gosh, yeah, we'll get into it, but oh my gosh, Kingdom Hearts 3 actually making reference to every single game that came before it. Wow.
Yeah, although I did listen to the Waypoint Radio recap series Lore Reasons up until Kingdom Hearts 3, so I got that those gaps filled in by a group of people that mostly had never played the games, so I feel like I was pretty prepared.
Sure.
Definitely recommend that series. Not to, advertise for other podcasts, but it was fun, and I don't know that I understood the plot any better than when I started listening, but it was entertaining.
Yeah, I also listened to most of that. I maybe not even most, but at least some of it. They definitely had some entertaining, but it was also very long-winded for a lot of it. And I think that there was one episode that I thought that was really great of theirs after Kingdom Hearts 3 came out, where they delved into more of the like the themes and sort of what different stuff represents. And really getting into like the philosophy of stuff, and I thought that was a really good episode, but very heavy on spoilers for Kingdom Hearts 3. So if
Makes
you
sense.
haven't checked that episode out, I definitely recommend
I
going back for
finally
that
will.
one.
I will say, maybe not, maybe the earlier episodes don't capture the story like totally accurately, but it does capture, I think, the feeling of trying to understand the story.
Sure.
Especially when someone says, "Wait, but is a keyblade sharp?" And the response is, "Wait, do you mean the keyblade or the keyblade or a
Yes.
keyblade or the keyblade? Which keyblade?" And so on and so forth.
Maybe it's just easier to call it the X Blade.
Maybe. I will say though, while we're talking about the series, I do have a long-running problem with the series, which I've been at peace with for a while, but I feel like it's worth mentioning here, which is that since around 2001, I'd say, I've used the online handle Author X, and just about as long I've been shortening it to the a nickname, which I for a while, I had people call me in person as well, which is Axel, and I was using Axel way before Kingdom Hearts 2 came out. And guess what people said whenever I introduced myself after 2005 as Axel? So,
If
oh,
you're a
like
big Kingdom
Kingdom
Hearts
Hearts.
fan, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just,
Sure.
I'm at peace with that mostly because it's been long enough that people, well, okay, people go back to what they say. I don't use it as much, but also people went back to what they said before, which is, oh, like Axl Rose. But I felt like that was worth mentioning
Okay.
as history with the series.
I mean, I think that's always going to be true of any sort of handle or nickname, is that people are just going to use whatever they have reference for it. Like mine is Blue Streak, which I got as the very first word of the Sonic Sat-Am theme song of Blue Streak Speeds By. But then a movie by the same name of Blue Streak came out, some cop movie that I don't even think I've seen. But that's rough. And then yeah, everyone goes like the movie, and I'm like no. So I think that just happens to everyone.
I've never even heard of that movie. Obviously my first guess would be Sonic. My second guess would actually be one of the lesser known Transformers, I think is named Blue Streak. So, you know, people will, you know, make connections whenever they hear something. So there you go.
Sure. The I've also gotten into talking about the developers of this video game that we talk about during this podcast. Mm-hmm. And so Kingdom Hearts 3 is so it's a little bit mixed. But usually the development team for Kingdom Hearts 3 is referred to as Square Enix's first production department or third production department. It sort of depends on like what the reporter says, but it's one of those two. Part of the problem could also be the fact that Square Enix was restructured a number of times during the development of Kingdom Hearts 3, because it just had such a long dev time, build time. So that could also lead to some of this, like, why this department is referred to as both the first department and third department. But yeah, Square Enix, first or third department. This is not the same team that developed Kingdom Hearts and Kingdom Hearts 2, which by the time of Kingdom Hearts 2 was known as Square Enix's Product Development Division 1 team. Yay! And that, of course, has a different name than what they had when Kingdom Hearts 1 was made, because that was when they were still known as Squaresoft, right? That was before Square Enix Enix merged with Squaresoft and became Square Enix. So, but yeah, for the first two games, same development team. That team went on with Tetsuya Nomura to develop Final Fantasy Versus 13 Versus, which was then canceled and restarted as Final Fantasy 15. But yeah, they got tied up with that whole fiasco of Final Fantasy 13 side story, whatever. And then the Dream Drop Distance team slash Birth by Sleep team slash all of the HD Remix team are the developers behind Kingdom Hearts 3. So the side game people basically stepped up and did the full Kingdom Hearts 3 game. And then they also had some help with some other, I can't find it now, but I do know that the Gummy Ship was handled by a separate, Square Enix team. I just can't find the notes of who it was, but yeah. Gummy Ship
that team, is interesting.
The Gummy Ship game within Kingdom Hearts 3 handled by a separate team. I can't find any official name for them, just reference that they had worked on an old PlayStation 1 game that had a very similar mechanics. It was a starship sort of game. Anyways, that was my little dev corner. Let's see. What do we usually go into the plot? Do you want to handle this one, David, or should I with my February? I can go with what I have, and you can fill in the blanks. How about that? That might be fun.
Sure. I think sure. I feel like I have a pretty good handle on how to summarize it.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
So, as of the previous Kingdom Hearts games, it was established that Sora has three or four different people.
Spoilers!
Sora has three or four odd different people's hearts sleeping within him. And, has in the past, because I think I was counting Kairi. Kairi's already out.
Correct.
And,
It's really just we care about Roxas at this point.
Yes. Well, there's Roxas, Naminé, and...
Ventus,
thank you. And, they know some of this. They also know that, the group, Sora, Mickey, Yen Sid, I think, what's it, Ienzo, who was an Organization 13 member, got turned back into a human, is now helping them as a scientist. But they know that Aqua is trapped in the Realm of Darkness, and they know that the true Organization 13 is actually composed of, or planned to be composed of, different versions of Xehanort.
Or people that he has in order.
Yes. Well, yes. He is, I was going to say, that are either other people that he's Norded by possessing them with fragments of his heart, or versions of himself from the past who have had their hearts pulled forward in time and then placed in a vessel body, which is sort of one of the projects that they're working on throughout most of this game is figuring out how to make those vessels. Or versions of people he has possessed in the past that are brought into the present. And their ultimate goal is to have 7 champions of light and 13 champions of dark clash, which will bring forth the Keyblade, as in the Greek letter key, which will grant Xehanort the ultimate power. And then there's about 30 hours of Disney World where nothing important to the plot happens.
Correct.
And
Sora is sent on the mission to find his power of waking. He does that through... the first one makes sense, like going to Hercules, right? But the rest, absolutely no help in furthering that plot there.
Yeah, so... 30 hours later, which are mostly... Sora goes to a Disney World, meets the people there, and someone from Organization 13 shows up to mess with them, and then Sora fixes it and leaves. And eventually, they figure out that they need to... during this time... King Mickey and Riku are in the Realm of Darkness trying to find Aqua. They finally find her, but she's been in the Realm of Darkness so long, she has turned evil because she gave up on being found.
She also got attacked by... Ansem? Was it Ansem that she got into a fight with and lost?
I don't remember
who she got into the fight with now.
It doesn't terribly matter.
Yeah.
But they find her, she attacks Riku and King Mickey, and Sora has been saying, hey, you should send me to the Realm of Darkness to help this whole time, but the others have been telling him, no, you're still not at your full power, you still haven't found the power of awakening, but surprise, surprise, his friends being in danger is what sort of gives him a door into the Realm of Darkness to save them, and then
he finds unlocks the power that of power. Yeah.
Because that's, of course, his friends being in mortal danger is what gives him the power in the end. But once they have Aqua, they're able to go to
where... I just want to pull this to the... I just want to pull over for a moment and discuss the fact that, like, at the very beginning of the game, you travel to this beach in the Realm of Darkness as Sora and Mickey... Or not, as Riku and Mickey. And Mickey. You get to fight this, like, Tower of Heartless, right? Yeah. And they lose that fight, kind of, and then... They come back to that exact same beach. It's like that's all that exists.
That's the only thing in the Realm of Darkness. Yes, I noticed that too.
One beach.
and then they are defeated and they leave and they come back to that one beach.
And this time they find Aqua. Yeah.
Yes. I guess this was everyone's assumption with no evidence, but surprised to turn out that Aqua was not, in fact, nor did her falling was not being possessed by Xehanort. It was just your run-of-the-mill falling to darkness. But, of course, being...
for good trailers, though.
Yes. Being beat up by Sora...
You're already too late.
It sort of knocks her out of it. So, they have one of the champions they're looking for. Aqua leads them to... where she put Ventus's body to sleep at the end of Birth by Sleep, and they do have to fight, or she fights Vanitas, which is, you know, nice, some more bit of closure from Birth by Sleep, and then
one of the times where you play as another character, and probably because they already had all of the setup from the earlier. Game, right?
Yes. I mean, I'm sure they had to rebuild everything, but they had an idea of, you know, what kind of abilities she had and what her fighting style was. So, between Aqua knowing how to get to where she hid Ventus...
Just, I want to do the fact that this was the Castle Oblivion that she hid him away in, which was Castle Oblivion was a transformed Land of Departure from Birth by Sleep. Just really good moment right there. Mm-hmm.
Finally turns it back into its original state, and so between that and Sora having the power of waking, which was very ill-defined, but seems to mostly be about being able to unlock and restore other people's hearts. So
I would say it's also being able to find them.
Yes. Yes, that was pretty much how he found Aqua, Riku, and Mickey before as well. Yeah. So he's able to take Ventus's heart that's sleeping in him and put it back in his body. So now they've got Aqua and Ventus, and around the same time, Axel and Kairi are done training,
makes no sense at all. Anyways,
it's
their
fun.
whole side story.
They've just been off in a virtual world training this whole time, and then there's a really nice moment where. Because another thing that happened in Birth by Sleep was, all three of the trio in Birth by Sleep connected with the Kingdom Hearts trio at different points. So, Kairi and Aqua get to meet again, and I think Kairi doesn't even remember it until they meet up. But Aqua says that she, you know, bequeathed her Keyblade to Kairi, and now Kairi's been trained as a Keyblade user, which will not be at all useful, but that's nice.
No. Yeah.
And at that point, I believe they head out to the... they unlock a new area and head out to the Keyblade Graveyard, where all of the new organization folks are waiting for them. Although, no, there was also... some of the organization members actually... that were brought back in, then betrayed the organization to rescue the actual Ansem I don't remember his full title, but the actual Ansem, not Ansem Seeker of Darkness.
It's Ansem the Wise.
Ansem the Wise, there we go. So that he could help the, you know, the hero group.
Yep.
And so they make it to the Keyblade Graveyard. There's a big fight, but the...
Yes, everything builds up towards the Keyblade Graveyard. Everything has been building to this moment.
Yes, and then everybody gets consumed by darkness and their hearts are separated.
Well, I would say they all... Like, so there's two timelines here.
Yes.
It's how I would present this.
I should
timeline...
I was going to say, I shouldn't say consumed by darkness, because that's a very specific thing that happens in Kingdom Hearts.
Yes.
What I meant to say was that they are attacked by a giant swarm of Heartless that the organization has summoned.
And there's also the fact that Donald Duck performs the strongest magic in the entire Final Fantasy universe that, it appears, kills him. Because it's just, like, mm-hmm. such a powerful thing that it drained his life.
There's Mickey telling him, no, don't do it.
And then, yeah, they're attacked by Heartless. They're attacked by, what's the Lingering Will, I think it is? Yeah, they're just killed. Some of them are straight up, they're killed.
No, they're not attacked right. by Lingering
no,
Will.
No, that's...
But...
Lingering Will saves in the second timeline.
Yes.
Right?
So,
there
yes.
you go.
So what happens is
Will
that...
I know Lingering Will shows up.
They're attacked by this overwhelming swarm
was
of
Was it young
Heartless.
Xehanort? Who does the attacking in this?
It was young Xehanort because at first they think it's Terra.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it turns out he's just changed his colors to look like Terra because he's... possessing Terra's body, and then it's young Xehanort, he attacks them, I was going to say something else with young Xehanort, but that's after Sora goes back, because Sora ends up in the final world,
yeah,
which is basically Limbo, or the afterlife, or I think it was, like, people that are waiting to be reincarnated or something, or just to move on, something like that, where he meets a little plush guide, which I feel like probably
he's from the mobile game.
The mobile game? Yeah.
Yes. I can't remember his name right now, but yes, he's from the mobile game.
Chirithi.
Yes.
So, Chirithi tells him that he must have a lot of willpower to... Or no, I think he says that Sora apparently hasn't actually died because he still got his body, but he brought himself to the final world, which he's done before. And so Sora has to sort of collect himself... literally, because there's lots of him split
so
everywhere.
So many.
And then follows a... Well, then he goes through a series of battles to reclaim the hearts of his companions from this powerful Heartless that is sort of storing them. Once he's freed those, he follows a light that turns out to be Kairi back to the World of Light. And it turns out that he sort of arrives moments before the attack.
One thing to mention during the final world, there's a completely optional, missable moment where the only time where you can interact with Naminé is.
Oh, is that who you talk to?
Yeah, well, it's one of the potential people you talk to. There are these little, like, stars, shimmers... Mm-hmm. That you can interact with and get little, like, voiced moments. And one of them is Naminé, and that's the only time in the entire game where you can have a conversation with her, as I recall.
Yeah, well, There were several of them where you just get a little vague bit of text that tells you about, you know, everyone has some kind of regrets that leaves them in limbo, but only one of them was a voiced conversation, so I assume that must have been Naminé.
Anyways, continue.
So he sort of goes back in time, his determination is redoubled, and in this version, the Lingering Will, which is the armor of Terra, appears and protects them. And there's also the first time that I think will happen a few times that young Xehanort tells Sora that, hey, you just did all of this nonsense to bring back your friends. If you keep doing that, your own heart is going to disappear.
Mm-hmm. The other big thing that happens in the successful timeline is the people from the past, the Keyblade users of the past, come forward to help Sora through the the Union game.
I thought that was fantastic. First of all, because I never played the mobile game, but I still think that the idea that, you know, all of the people who participated or reached a certain rank or however it was decided actually there got was, there.
Yeah, there was a special event that you could participate in, and if you, like, completed those objectives, you would... They advertised it as, like, you were going to be in Kingdom Hearts 3, and no one really knew what that meant.
Yeah, it turns into a little vertical shooter where the action button is shooting Keyblades, but all of the Keyblades are from the Keyblade graveyard, and the actual name that, like, the action button shows the name of the user whose Keyblade you're firing, and you see a whole list of them as you just, you know, fire constantly since it's turned into a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty great.
Yeah.
So they use the... I also really like that just because the Keyblade graveyard has been, like, a cool visual for such a long time, and it finally paid off with actually... For this whole game specifically, this swarm of Heartless swirling around has been another visual that's been very menacing and overpowering. And so it turns out that the way that you defeat a giant swarm of Heartless is with a giant swarm of Keyblades. And I just thought that was a fantastic payoff.
Yeah.
After having both of those separate as visuals for so long. So, after that, they... finish that battle and move on to a labyrinth in the graveyard.
Where we will be fighting and defeating the real organization.
Yes. There's a series of fights which are sort of sped up a bit because you fight many of them in battles with two or three at once, and each time you defeat one, it pauses to have a little death cutscene before moving on to
the specific rest of the character. Fight. Yeah.
Yes. It will pause, show you the specific death cutscene for that character, and then the battle resumes with the other characters where it left off. You know, there are some heartfelt goodbyes, as well, I believe, that that's when Terra is recovered, and
yes,
it turns out that one of the, I believe it was Ansem, Seeker of Darkness, who had sort of a stand, like JoJo, he had this big dark creature that would appear behind him and then fight people on his behalf. And it's revealed that that was actually Terra's heart this whole time. So his heart takes control of his body, being possessed by Xehanort at that point, and so he's restored as well. And it's revealed that each time you defeated one of those members of the organization, a key was created that the old primary Xehanort has been collecting, but he, of course, he is not going to let himself, 13th member, be killed, so instead he grabs Kairi and sort of kills, dissolves, whatever, Kairi, creating the 13th clash between light and dark and the key. And
which I do, I even wrote in my notes that it really sucks that Kairi spends, like, the way she is brought in Kingdom Hearts 2 as a new Keyblade wielder, and that she's going to be a badass, and she spends this entire game in a side story with Axel training to become a master, and she
then
never
she just
fights.
Keeps getting kidnapped.
Yeah, she just gets kidnapped.
There's a bunch of teaming up with other Keyblade wielders during the labyrinth.
Never once team up with Kairi.
Team up with her.
She is used as the reason why Sora will actually fight and the clash will actually happen for most of that, right?
Yep.
And then she's just discarded at the end there. Ah, that really sucked for Kairi.
Yep.
And not good. Do better, Nomura. Do better.
Yep, and so there's a bit that I didn't entirely understand where they say, Xehanort can travel through time, he can create portals, so we'll use that power to trap him. But essentially, they all of the other Keyblade wielders join forces to create some kind of portal to where Sora can finally defeat Xehanort, so Sora, Donald, and Mickey follow him and end up in the city that's been shown in kind of cutscenes and flashbacks a lot, which is...
Yeah, the sort of, framing of Kingdom Hearts 3 at the very beginning is this, game of chess between Xehanort and
Ericus. Yes, the other teacher from Birth by Sleep. It's
square backwards. I just couldn't think of it.
Oh, huh. I think I did know that and I just forgot, but yeah.
They
of
did a
yen square backwards.
With, yes.
So,
yeah, Scala ad Salem? However you would, it's Latin, I'm sure. I'm not good at pronouncing stuff.
Yes, it was framed as this chess game. Occasionally it would, when something really dramatic happened, it would cut back to the chess game where, young Xehanort, not the young Xehanort that's possessing Terra, the actual young Xehanort would maybe seem to be winning, and then young Ericus would make a move, and then a bunch of his pieces would reappear because I don't understand what game they're playing, and it seems like they're just making up the rules, but it was shown in the background. This was happening in this city made up of floating islands with pyramids and of white buildings, and so you end up there at the place that Xehanort presumably grew up, or at least trained, defeat him in a pretty drawn-out battle where he kind of summons echoes of all of the previous Organization 13 members again.
And there's a lot of, flipping the city around. Yeah.
Yes, he uses the power of the X-Blade and Kingdom Hearts to reshape the battlefield around you. It's all very cool and epic. And at the last minute, once he's defeated, the spirit of Ericus appears, and you kind of get the speech from Xehanort saying what he was trying to accomplish with all of this, which was that basically darkness emerges from people, so he thought if he wiped out people, then the world would be pure and unblemished again. And Ericus sort of convinces him, hey, you've lost, we just need to
yeah.
trust the next generation to do right and
It was one of those taking someone who has this entire series just been doing terrible things and been like, oh, but he's been doing it for a good reason kind of bad guy.
I don't know that I'd say he was ever doing it for good reason, but it was something that he convinced himself was a good reason.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a twist in that, you know, all we've known so far is he wanted to gain more power, and we finally found out what he was going to do with that power.
Yeah, kinda.
But Ericus convinces him to finally give up. Sora uses the crossblade, keyblade, X-blade, to close Kingdom Hearts again and return to their own time. But he as warned by young Xehanort earlier, Sora uses the power of waking to go back to the final world again and rescue Kairi, but ends up disappearing himself. And yeah. then there's a nice montage where everybody gets to, you know, live their lives and be happy and not be,
In
you know,
Destiny
menaced
Islands.
By darkness constantly. Yeah, yeah well, there's, you know, Roxas, Axel, and Xion, and I think...
Which we didn't even discuss, Xion showing up for that, and yeah, there's some good moments. There's a lot. There are
lot that was cool.
of fan moments during the whole Keyblade graveyard where you're, like, going around helping each of the characters or defeating the bad guys. Like, there are a lot of fan moments throughout that.
Yeah, it was nice. Like, I hadn't even played that game, but I knew about Xion, so it was nice to see Xion reappear and see
358 over 2.
Roxas and Axel not only be reunited, but actually remember that she exists.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they got the vessel that they needed to give Naminé a body as well, so she's restored. I was saying Roxas, Axel, and Xion get to be in Twilight Town and eat sea salt ice cream. Everyone else gets to go to Destiny Islands and hang out and play with beach ball. And then the final scene, of course, is something totally inscrutable with entirely new characters, except for Zigbar, who goes to...
Again, not new characters, just characters that you wouldn't know if you haven't played Union.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I really didn't know anything about... Well, I knew the general plot of Union Cross because of the Waypoints podcast, but none of the characters, I should say.
Sure. And so, they don't really show off their faces here or anything. It's just more the motif of which animal they represent. But yeah.
All right. Well, then maybe with that context, I would have understood what was happening. But basically, some of the Organization 13 members, but definitely the actually maybe I don't remember if the Org 13 did, but Maleficent and Pete kept popping up looking for a black
box.
Yes,
they did, and Zigbar. Zigbar is following them? Oh, I don't remember what he's doing
okay,
in
that
game.
Okay, well, that explains why I thought the Organization 13 was looking for it, because Zigbar, it turns out, he had an agenda the whole time, which was to find this box that only appeared after the Keyblade War. So he finds it. Four other people that I guess are...
they are most of the original leaders of Union, yeah.
They show up. Zigbar is revealed to be one of their group that has just was
well. So
changed
Zigbar,
or disguised.
Zigbar is the Master of Masters, is what has been revealed here. Or he's the apprentice of the Master of Masters. He's the apprentice of the Master of Masters. Something like that. I can't remember right now. Darn it.
I'm looking at the page, and he is the apprentice to the Master of Masters.
Yes, that's what it is.
So, he basically tells them, I've been pretending to be Zigbar, presumably pretending to be Bray before that, this whole time, just waiting for this conflict to happen so that this box shows up, and now that everything's in place, I'm here and I summoned you, and then you get another flashback to young Ericus and Xehanort, and Xehanort is surprisingly okay.
Let's play a new game.
Yeah. Xehanort is surprisingly okay with Ericus making up new rules and bullshit to win the previous game, but they play a new game with new pieces, and that's obviously setting up for future plot.
Yeah, and each of those pieces represent one of the animals of the Union Houses.
Oh, yes,
sort of thing.
They put down pieces that are that match the masks that or helmets that those people are wearing. So obviously, I did not have context to understand that last scene.
I barely have. The Union is... See, my history with Kingdom Hearts is that I loved the first game. The simplicity of it. Like, I feel like the mix of the new characters for Kingdom Hearts worked really well for the Final Fantasy characters making cameos and the Disney characters who are largely relegated to their own worlds, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like the mix of the original Kingdom Hearts was pretty much perfect for all of that. Kingdom Hearts 2, Chain of Memories and everything that follows it, it's Organization 13. And then at the moment that you're introducing 13 new characters, all of which have... are basically two characters. and then they also spend most of their time like with hoods over them, so you don't even see who they are until... Yeah, it just... At that point, it just ballooned. It became way too complicated. I still love the series. But yeah, no, that's the downfall of the series, in my opinion, was the whole Organization 13 and deciding to just bloat the original cast of characters like that. Just not good.
Well, I definitely got the impression...
And Union didn't help by saying, and then now there's a whole other set to worry about.
Yes. They definitely kept introducing games where they said, oh, now in this, you know, like, you know, the Kingdom Hearts 2 set, you know, Chain of Memories and what have you, they were essentially introducing a set of villains that the same heroes would face, but then they also kept introducing games set at different points with a whole different cast of heroes and villains, and then having to bring them into the plot as well. And I would say I'm pretty satisfied with the plot of Kingdom Hearts 3 insofar as it just sort of brought all of those elements together to... well, not entirely with the Union Cross characters, but otherwise brought them all together into resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like,
no.
They really didn't introduce many new ideas. It was just resolving everything that was set up.
Yeah, a lot of it is resolving, and what did I write? I said that the ending when we see everyone at Destiny Islands and they're finally like able to relax and we see Sora and Kairi together finally, like that's been from the very first game a situation where like every time they are brought together they're then pulled apart, and this looked like it was finally going to be that time where everyone can finally, like, be done with it, right? Can finally say, yes, we've done it. And then the decision to have Sora disappear during that cutscene is like being stabbed in the feelings.
I figured that was going to happen. I was just thinking,
sure.
Oh, he's not... I was surprised that he was even there, and then he disappeared, and I thought, oh, I see, he was... I just interpreted that as, oh, they're remembering him, but he's not actually there. I was fully prepared for that to happen.
I was hopeful that this would be the time where they can just, because they almost do it with Kingdom Hearts 2. They almost say give everyone a happy ending there, but then they don't, as it turns out. But yeah.
Other than the sort of as I expected, you know, tragic slash noble sacrifice, it was really nice to just have that montage of all of the people who have been basically dicked around by Xehanort's schemes, you know, either like put into a coma or erased from existence or had their memories rewritten or thrown into the realm of darkness. It was really nice to just see them hanging out and living their lives, and that was really all I wanted going in, and I more or less got that.
Yeah. And then they do give us the secret Yozora ending to tell us, like, what happens to Sora potentially. So, there's that. Which, the spoiler, I guess, it looks like he is sent to the world that ends with you.
Yep. Well, there is the 104 building, which is not... At first I was like, wait, is this supposed to be the real world? And then he sees the 104 building, which it's... Because in the real world, it's 109.
Yeah.
And the 104 is The World Ends With You.
Yep. Shibuya, Japan, but the Square Enix version of it. But also, Yozora shows up in that special trailer, which is from the trailer for a video game from the Toy Box World, which I thought was fantastic. Who that was?
Yeah. That's awesome. the fake video game within the video game that the Toy Story characters said, oh, you must be that guy, when they saw Sora.
Because he has the spiky hair.
Of course, exactly.
And it also just is silly that Sora is in kind of the name of Yozora, right?
Yeah.
Any other thoughts about the story? Or I kind of wanted to just go through each of the worlds of this game and do a quick little, like, what we thought of it.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so Hercules is sort of the tutorial world, right? Mm-hmm. I thought it was a good level. There's some coolish moments that we hadn't really seen previously in the Kingdom Hearts series, with, like, buildings collapsing and just a good amount of, like, being able to play with the new mechanics of wall running and stuff like that.
Yeah, it gave me that feeling of, like, oh, this is a much bigger scale than they would have been able to do before. The world actually feels bigger, and they've got big, impressive set pieces, like fighting the titans, especially the earth titan up the mountain, and that you have to, you know, shadow of the Colossus your way up a little bit.
Kinda. That's a really good thing to bring forward, is that Kingdom Hearts 3 is the first in the series that hasn't been built around the idea of PlayStation 2 limitations.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we finally have these maps that are just rather expansive in size.
Yep, they warped and evolved straight to the PS4.
Yeah. After that, also about the Hercules is that it kind of actually follows the storyline of Hercules, whereas all of the other previous Hercules levels has just been a Here's an arena.
Oh, yeah.
So this is That's the first true. Time where they ever actually did the Hercules stories, which I thought was pretty good.
I think I would even say that it set a precedent for the sort of story and variety of the world that a lot of the other worlds couldn't follow.
Okay. I'll follow up with you later on that. Twilight mm-hmm. Town is the next one, and Twilight Town was actually the moment for me of going, oh wow, here's a Kingdom Hearts 2 level being represented in Kingdom Hearts 3. And just the crowds of the people, the voice acting you hear as you're running around. This is also when they introduce the hidden Mickeys / Lucky Emblems, as they're actually called in this game.
I kept calling them hidden Mickeys, but yeah.
Yeah.
Since that's a thing that existed, it was weird to me that they didn't... I guess it would be weird if it was also named after the king, but they're hidden Mickeys.
Yes. And yeah, I thought... I like this level, but I also, it's annoying when you have this ability to run up the walls, and at the same time, like, this is the one where it really shows that, the limitations of that, I feel. Anyways. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, any other thoughts on Twilight Town? It was fun. It was more of, it was like the last bit of actual, you know, Kingdom Hearts story before the rest of the Disney worlds, where it only really shows up between worlds.
Yeah.
And like you said, it was neat to run around a familiar area and see how it was updated and you know, more alive and vibrant and expansive.
The Toy Story world starts with or Toy Box starts with the advertisement for Verum Rex, which is where Yozora comes from. That was really weird that trailer just plays when you enter that world.
Yeah, that was weird.
It is such a Final Fantasy trailer.
It is, but it's also very much in line with Toy Story, which has, you know, done that... was it Toy Story 2 that has... like a cut into a something that turns out to be of them playing a video game.
Yes, yes.
So that seemed appropriate.
And the Andy's room is an odd mixture of like it's the house from Toy Story 2 forward, but it's the room design largely from Toy Story 1. It's a little bit weird as far as Andy's room, but also I was
more
really thrown
than I
off.
Paid attention to.
Sure, I really like the Toy Story movies. I was also really thrown off by the fact that, like you're saying, in Toy Story 2, there's the whole video game that already exists, and that's being there's also already a Al's Toy Barn and stuff like that exists, but mm-hmm. that isn't represented in this game. Instead, there's just this new mall that was super generic, and we spend most of our time in that mall, and I just did not care for it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought they had a pretty good variety of enemies, since they went with not as much Heartless. Well, there are a few different kinds of Heartless, but mostly they had this idea of Heartless that can possess the toys in the mall, which, since the toys are also supposed to be alive, introduces a whole other existential crisis. But mostly they just sort of act like these other toys aren't alive, but then Buzz starts worrying that it's a whole thing, but...
Yeah.
My point being... I think that there's a good amount of variety in gameplay. You explore a lot, and there's different kinds of enemies and bosses as you run around, but the story of that really wasn't much. It was just sort of Sora meets Buzz and Woody, and then they run around looking for their friends.
Yeah. The mechs are cool-ish. I did not like how much health / how hard they could hit compared to other Heartless. But if you then were commanding a mech, then it was like you were just stupid overpowered. I also had a problem with this level in that just you are a toy in a rather large mall that has a lot of empty space and a lot of walls that you can potentially run up, but there's nothing up there. So it just felt like it was like a lot of space here that was just pointless. I had issues with this level overall, even though Toy Box, as far as reviews go, is considered one of the better of the Disney worlds, but it was actually one of my least favorite once I got to this mall. I really liked the Andy's room, but I disliked it once we got to the mall. Any other thoughts for Toy Box?
Nope, I think that covered it.
Next up is Tangled, which, for me, this is the world that gets the award for most effort towards remaking the movie within the Kingdom Hearts 3 engine.
I was surprised at how much they recreated the specific cutscenes, especially the one where Rapunzel goes outside and goes through a series of panic attacks.
And they brought back the original VA for Flynn, but oddly not for Rapunzel, even though that, I can't remember her name now. I'm terrible with names. The voice actress for Rapunzel in the Disney movie has a history with the Kingdom Hearts series. She played
Mandy Moore.
Yeah, Mandy Moore. She played, who did she play in Kingdom Hearts 1? Aerith? I think she played Aerith in Kingdom Hearts 1. So it was weird that she wouldn't have come back for this. Hmm. I don't know what was up with that. But yeah, weird that half the cast was back.
Obviously, that's why they had to use someone else. That would be confusing if Rapunzel sounded like Aerith.
My favorite song, one of my favorite Disney songs, is the I See the Light during the lantern scene, and they did not play that song in this game for some reason, and I don't know why.
My thought while playing that world was, wow, they're just recreating the whole movie without the songs.
Yeah.
Which was it's funny weird. When we got to another world we'll talk about in a bit.
Yep. Any other thoughts?
I thought that they, I don't know, that was one of the worlds that was just kind of boring to me. Some of the interactions between Sora and Rapunzel were cute, but it was mostly just not very exciting. You just walk through woods, and then slightly different woods, and then swamp, which are just wet woods. And then there's a little bit where you explore a town, and then you fight the boss.
Yeah. Yeah. Monsters, Inc. is next. I thought this was overall a really good one. It takes place sometime shortly after the original movie, but it's it's an original take. It doesn't entirely make sense having Randall come back like that. But hey, it was entertaining. I enjoyed this level.
I think similar to the Toy Box, I felt like the story was, well, it was a little more involved than the Toy Box story, but it was still kind of boring. But the gameplay, especially going through the door vault and riding on the rails, I thought that was fun.
Up next is the Winnie the Pooh / 100 Acre Woods. World? Level? Let's just call it a level. I don't know who the elephant is, to be honest.
I think that was... First of all, I'm pretty sure it's a heffalump. And I think that's just... It must be a character that was added in more recent Winnie the Pooh stuff, because I don't know either, but I know that they've been coming out with those sort of movies or tapes or OVAs or whatever you call them pretty regularly.
Sure.
Direct kind of like how there's
DVD.
Yeah. Kind of like how there's, over a dozen Land Before Time movies that were almost all direct to DVD after the first one. So
sure.
I assume that's a character that was introduced and has become a staple of the more recent videos, but I don't know.
I like the Puzzle Bobble kind of minigame.
Yeah, that was alright. I just went back and played it one or two more times to get ingredients.
Sure. Next up is Frozen, which... really weak world, in my opinion.
That was a lot of filler in that world.
The... They have the entire voice cast come back, and as you alluded to earlier, they do two of the songs.
Yes, this time they recreated the movie, but with the songs.
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say that I really felt like they, especially compared to Tangled, I felt like they realized, oh, this is one that people are going to play the game for specifically, and so they put a lot of effort into it. They put a lot of stuff to do into it, but a lot of it was tedious and didn't matter, especially the labyrinth.
Yeah, and there's entire sections of the labyrinth that are just empty. Like, there should have been content there, but there wasn't. Like, maybe there would be a boss fight or something inside that labyrinth.
Yeah, I thought there would be a boss fight in some specific rooms, and then there wasn't, and so I just said, okay, weird.
Yeah, there's a pretty good fan theory, in my opinion, that states that this is actually the world that was they started development on this Frozen level before the Frozen movie even came out. And there's a fan theory that states that a lot of this confusion is because they were using an earlier draft of Frozen in which Elsa
was evil,
was the bad guy. And so
that
the labyrinth
is interesting.
Is that like Sora gets there and she traps him in that ice castle?
That makes,
and then you fight through it and you get to the top, and then you would fight Elsa at the top.
That makes way more sense.
And it also resolves the whole ice monster that you fight as the Heartless boss, right? Like that didn't make sense either, but
yeah,
like there's it really comes across as they had one version they were working from to create this, and then when the movie actually came out and had changed who the bad guy was, they had to go through and go, how can we rework all of these assets that we built into the movie that actually came out? And that, I think, it makes sense as a fan theory as to why this level feels so weird. Anyways.
Interesting. I'll also say that I did like the fact that the person that you team up with is the giant, scary-looking snow golem that Elsa creates to guard her palace. I thought, like, I kind of assumed, oh, you'll team up with Elsa at some point and she'll use her ice magic to help you, but nope, you get to team up with the big scary snow golem. I thought that was cute.
Yeah. After that is the Pirates of the Caribbean world, which, according to most reviews, is the one that people disliked the most. And I actually really liked that level a lot. Like, I would actually mark the Pirates of the Caribbean as one of my favorites in this game.
So I was not super looking forward to it, but then when I played it, it's weird. There's a lot of the structure of that world is really interesting, except that it's also mostly skippable. Like, all the interesting stuff is optional, which was a weird
decision.
That is true.
But yeah, I enjoyed the fact that it was like a little mini open world to explore, and that there are just all sorts of secrets and little areas to, find throughout. I had a lot of fun with this one.
Yeah. So I actually did that after the Big Hero 6 world. So at that point I was ready to get to the end of the game and resolve everything. And
Big Hero 6 I did next.
But I was ready to just, you know, skip through it. But then when I actually got to the open world part, I ended up, not even then, but when I finished the plot, I ended up going back and just exploring everything instead of blazing through to the end of the game, because that open section was so much fun.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised that You go through a bunch of levels, and there's a part where you actually get the ship, but you're immediately forced to go straight to Port Royal, and you do more business, and when it finally opens up, it says, okay, here's an open world, but the next place you need to go to is here. I was not expecting going there to immediately finish the story. I thought there would be more stuff in the open world, but...
Yeah, like, it is all optional.
That was it. It, like, the actual playing through the plot of that world is all leading up to the open world sailing section.
Yeah.
And then it's done. So, that was really weird.
And maybe that does point to why people didn't like it as their, if the, for reviews, like, they're mm-hmm. trying to streamline a lot of this stuff, right? And yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that very easily.
Big Hero 6 was...
I do want to point out something in, that I felt was the case in Tangled and Frozen and Pirates of the Caribbean.
Sure.
Which is that, those three are each just, like, some of, the worlds were basically split between, here's some business that happens after the movie, or they're just recreating the plot of the movie, and, Tangled, yeah. Frozen, and Pirates were recreating them. They had a big problem, but especially in Pirates, where they recreate the plot of the movie.
The third movie. Kinda. Like, yeah. They skim through a lot of it.
Yeah, that's my point, is a lot of it is like, you see a little bit of the plot, and then Sora goes off and has his own adventures, and then you meet up at the end, and one of the characters goes, oh, Sora, here's what happened while you were away. And
yeah.
Then you see the end of the movie. That was especially bad in Pirates, because you find out that, oh, the Captain Jack that was with you this whole time
was a clone crabs.
Made of crabs. And so not only did you miss most of the plot, while you thought you were adventuring with Jack, the real Jack was off doing the plot.
Doesn't matter. See, my whole thing about that game is that I just wanted to have a pirate adventure, and I got that.
There you go. Also, I did enjoy the fact that you got some almost God of War style, like, traveling conversations with, obviously not as much variety, but I like the fact that while you're sailing around after the fact with the real Captain Jack, there's occasionally, you know, I don't remember if it's Sora or Donald or Goofy, one of them will go, so are you the real Captain Jack, or are you a bunch of crabs? He'll go, what? Go, ah, don't worry about it, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
So yeah, that was, I enjoyed that world a lot more after I beat the plot that I didn't care about at all.
Yeah. I agree.
No, sorry, I do want to highlight another thing that was really funny, which is, like all of the other worlds, it ended up not mattering to the larger plot, but it was very funny that the Organization 13 member who was there, do you remember which one it was?
The one that does the thing with the cards?
No, it was the one who's a scientist.
He wanted to play games. Oh, yes, you're right. He was looking for the box.
Yes, he was looking for the box, and it was just really funny to me that, first of all, there's this cutscene where you find out, there's Davy Jones's, or not Davy Jones's locker, but like the box that everyone else was looking for. Davy Jones took out his heart and put it in a box, and then you cut to this Organization 13 member going, that doesn't make any sense. That's not how this works. You can't be alive without a heart. And just like being mad that that's not how this works. And going, how does that work? I have to find out. Is that the box we're looking for? And then, you know, cut to after a bunch of nonsense that doesn't matter, and they get the box, they open the box, and he goes, wait, it's a literal heart. This is useless. This means nothing. And he just leaves angry. That was, of all of the bits of organization members showing up and causing trouble, that was definitely the best, because it was just him being mad about, like, the fact that this doesn't actually fit into the lore at all.
Ready for Big Hero 6?
One sec. I'm trying to find Vexen. That's who it was.
Okay.
So, yes, ready for Big Hero 6.
Okay, so here's another world that is sort of open, with a split into, it's the same area, but like it's got a like one version for night, one version for day, right? And the bad guy for this one is Past Dark Riku, which, okay. and that whole storyline, in my opinion, is confusing. But otherwise, I like the idea of this being a sort of sequel to the movie. Mm-hmm. Baymax is still awesome. And overall, I thought this was a good one.
Yeah, I think to Pirates, it wasn't actually as open, but it sort of shook up the structure of just going through a bunch of sort of linear levels by giving you still fairly open world that you had to run around and do different things in. There's some going through hoops in a little course. There's running around fighting in different areas, and I just thought it was a nice little change from the usual structure of the game at that point, and the plot with Hero and Baymax, and the way that it followed up on the movie was actually nice. I'd say that was my favorite story of any of the worlds.
Oh, okay. Cool. Okay, so that should finish it for the Disney worlds. Next, I was thinking we would talk about combat in this game. And I have a lot of thoughts about the combat. Would you like me to start, or would you like to get your thoughts out of the way if they're not as complicated?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so so a lot of it actually stems from like the very beginning, where I felt like Sora's movement is weird. It feels like he should have like rollerblades on or something sometimes, just like how he's moving around. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't feel right with how the actual animation is running. You also have mobs of like 20 Heartless on the screen regularly, whereas like previous games the mobs would be at like max 8, right, usually. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot more enemies. Everything is moving around so quickly that it's not easy to focus and execute combat like you could in the previous games. And it was also I had just replayed Kingdom Hearts 2 and the like build up to Kingdom Hearts 3. I was like really excited. I played through Kingdom Hearts 1 and Kingdom Hearts 2 again just so that it was like really fresh. And then it was like going into this game of where combat had such a seriously different feel to it. And then there were these amusement rides and partner attacks that are just devastatingly powerful and would just wipe enemies. And it just, nothing felt right as far as the like older Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 kind of combat of like focusing in on an enemy, mm-hmm. watching for certain tells so that you can like get them into a combo. It just didn't seem to apply anymore, and that really bothered me for a while. What were your initial, like, these are my initial thoughts on combat. I have other thoughts on combat by the time you get towards that end game. What were your initial thoughts on combat?
So, I didn't really remember exactly how the previous games felt, so I didn't have that to compare it to. It did feel like it just throws a lot of different mechanics at you at once, and a lot of them were just essentially random. Of like, oh, well, your companions will offer to do some big attack, or one of the enemies will be marked as giving you an attraction, And so it just sort of, it felt like there was not very much strategy, so much as reacting to what was offered to you. And I pretty much always felt like I was going to, initially, that is, I was always going to either very slowly whittle down the large number of enemies by attacking them one by one, or it was going to give me a team attack or an attraction ride that would then wipe out the group. So it didn't really feel like I had much options.
Another big difference with this game, as far as the combat slash abilities you could throw in there, is that you get those AP points in a ridiculous rate in this game.
Yes.
Whereas previous games, you would have to like make decisions about how you would build up Sora's abilities on like what you cared about. In this game, I didn't have to make a choice as far as what abilities to apply for most of the game. The items you could pick up or the leveling up itself, you would just have more than enough points. So what I realized as I was playing the game, though, as I was getting through world after world, is that the new Keyblade mechanic of the Keyblades being able to transform really changes the experience. And in my opinion, kept things feeling fresh every world, because at the end of that previous world, you got a new Keyblade, you then have this completely new like combo mechanic as you like let it level up, and then it becomes claws, or it becomes yo-yos, or it becomes a giant staff, right? I had a lot of fun with that. The other realization I kind of had was that I think they were going for the 1,000 Heartless battle in Kingdom Hearts 2. In that battle, you could technically try and fight each of those enemies one by one, but the way that you're really, like, the fight is designed is that you are spamming the special abilities that are made available, the triangle reaction sort of commands that are made available during that specific battle with those enemies, where you're then just flying through the enemies, destroying them in like a single hit. And that's what it really feels like in this game, why those attractions don't have a like a mana bar or anything like that, is because they want you to be able to just spam that kind of stuff throughout and feel awesome. It's just supposed to be stupid fun, which wasn't the feeling of previous Kingdom Hearts games, outside of like a specific moment. But I think that's what they were going for, as the like, this is what they wanted all of their combat to feel like. At least that's what I've tried to convince myself is a logical explanation.
Yeah, so I enjoyed the sort of form changes, but once I got about halfway through the game, I sort of decided, okay, there are a couple of different types, and realized that essentially I was just going to stick with the one from Tangled, I think it's the Ever After Keyblade, because it at least felt pretty overpowered, because that's the one that lets you create clones of yourself, and then when you fire, all of the clones focus fire, and if you do a combo, then they'll all vanish in a big attack. But if you don't do a combo, you can just have five times the attack power, like just spam five times if your combo is six attacks long, and it drains health kind of ridiculously quickly. So,
sure.
But even so, it felt like a decent amount of variety. For the second half of the game, I basically kept that and the honey pot, because I like to get ingredients and complete the ingredients list. So while exploring, I would use the honey pot, which gives you more ingredients and makes cooking easier. And if I got into a battle, I'd switch to the Ever After. That said, as I got more abilities and got more comfortable with them, I did feel like I had more control over what I could do because, you know, getting magic gave me what I really wanted, which was being able to hit a whole bunch of weak enemies in a single attack in an area, and I really only used the King Simba link, but that was also, like, there's a whole bunch of enemies on the screen, I'm just going to have a big attack that that hits all of them a bunch.
The Simba link is really good.
So, basically, as it went on, I felt like I had more options and learned how to use those options effectively. And the focus attack where you go into first-person mode and lock on to enemies, you know, if they're spread out, that would be useful. So, yeah, as it went on, I felt like I had more options, but it still felt like if I got tired of fighting, I still had a few buttons that were just like, I'm tired of this battle, I'm just going to win now.
Yeah.
Mostly the Simba link.
I thought it was pretty impressive how much optional content there is in this game. Each of the Disney worlds largely is a linear story, but you are able to go back to those worlds afterwards, sometimes those worlds would be updated as if time had actually passed since you had previously been there, which I don't remember being a thing in previous Kingdom Hearts games, or at least not to this degree. Hercules.
I thought in Kingdom Hearts 2 there were points where it told you to go back to a world to get more plot.
Yes, yes. That is exactly what Kingdom Hearts 2
which
does.
Which is
yes.
Not
but
quite the same.
That's not optional
that's
at
fair.
That point. Yeah. What I'm trying to say is, like, there are you never have to go back to Hercules, mm-hmm. right? You don't have to go back. But if you do, you'll find that there's, like, actual reconstruction efforts, and there's, like, now people wandering around, and I just thought that was pretty cool that the worlds would update like that with content, kind of, depends on how you define content, I guess, but just the fact that you could go back and things have changed and feels like things are progressing, and I like that. There's also things like I wrote down some examples. The Hercules one stood out to me. Rapunzel standing in front of her family painting in the town
yep,
square.
That was nice.
Having lost her hair. Those were the two that I really mm-hmm. enjoyed going back and seeing stuff like that.
Yeah, I did end up going back to each of the worlds at the end because I wanted to complete. Well, first of all, the recipes, which you don't necessarily need to revisit worlds for, but you do have to, I think the Flan minigames only appear after you complete the story, but you can just do that before you leave. There's also the photo missions, which, like a lot of things, I just looked at the collectibles I was almost done with and completed those at the end, and not the ones that I was totally off from, but I think it's the last photo mission that is unlocked is take a picture of all of Sora's companions. So I ended up going back and revisiting each of them just to do that, which was it actually took me a bit to find Rapunzel because I forgot that her hair was cut short and turned brown. So I was running around like, where is she? Why is this, you know, random lady with short brown hair standing at the end of the marketplace? Oh, right.
Other optional content is pretty much all of the gummy ship
that
stuff.
That I almost entirely skipped.
Sure. Because you can just book it to the world that you need to go to next, and then you just sort of, like, quick travel to it mm-hmm. from there, right? But there are a lot of missions to take there. A lot of, if you need rare ingredients for like leveling up your keyblades, the gummy ship missions are not even just the missions, but there are. I spent some time just like flying around in the gummy ship, destroying asteroids, collecting materials, because that was actually fun, in my opinion. So yeah, something that there's a lot of content with the gummy ship that really is optional, and I'm impressed that they put so much effort into it. Anything else you want to mention?
Nope.
I'm okay with just going into like final thoughts at this point. I had a mix of fascination, pleasure, and frustration with Kingdom Hearts 3. The fact that it plays so differently from the series before it rubbed me the wrong way, especially at the beginning. But by the end of the game, I was in love. and the story got me all of the hype that it needed to, especially during the last bit with the Keyblade Graveyard. And I had a blast throughout, even if there were low points.
Yeah, I had fun with it. I feel like there were not. I felt a little frustrated that the main thing I went in for, the resolution to the ongoing plot, was just sort of put on hold for, as I've said a few times, for 30 hours. But you know, let's say the gameplay was just interesting enough to keep me going without getting bored. In fact, I probably intentionally made the later levels sort of break the mold a bit just to keep it interesting, which, if so, was a good idea. I will say there's something I talked with some other people about that I realized, which is that I think the other Kingdom Hearts games also did a lot of that, where the Disney worlds didn't really have a lot of relevance to the ongoing story. But I think in
correct
in the first Kingdom Hearts, in Birth by Sleep, certainly, and maybe some of the others, you got to learn a lot of the personality of the main characters by how they interacted with the Disney worlds, and that kept it interesting. I think for Kingdom Hearts 3, it was more noticeable to me because we already have a really good idea of Sora's personality, of the dynamic between Sora, Donald, and Goofy. So you didn't really see a lot of like new. You didn't learn much about their characters during the Disney world. So I think it suffered a bit in that sense. But
yeah. I would agree.
It didn't really hold any surprises to me, but I had fun playing it, and I got what I came for, so I'm pretty happy with it.
Yay! Okay. I think that does it for us, then. Go to my little outro speech. We've already said that the next game we plan to play is the Hatoful Boyfriend. Mm-hmm. I would like to mention in general that, and thank that Carbohydrin and Funk Fiction for letting us use their songs for our intro and outros respectively. Their work is great, and you can check out more by following the links in the description. And that should do it for us. Fools, this was fun. Thank you.